Hey, and welcome on to NBA Recap. Today is Saturday, March 12th, and on the show today, we're going to be redrafting the 2018 NBA Draft. This was a fascinating draft class. There was some noteworthy trades, some noteworthy busts, some really big-time steals, and at the end of the day, just a lot of talented players. So we're going to be going through and redrafting who will be the number one pick. Will it be DeAndre Ayton still, or will Luka Doncic steal that spot? We shall see. But first, if you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod. Or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. And if you enjoy the show, consider subscribing or leaving a review. It really helps get the word out. All right, so before we begin, I just want to point out the purpose of this exercise is not to flame GMs who passed up on guys that were diamonds in the rough, steals of the draft. So for instance, Jalen Brunson was the 33rd pick in this draft. And just a little spoiler, he's going to be way higher than that in our redraft. So for all the GMs that did not take him from picks 1 through 32, we're not going to be saying, why didn't you take Jalen Brunson? Because it was not the consensus at the time that he would be even in the first round. I mean, there might have been a couple of guys here or there that had him in the 20s or even in the teens, but it was definitely the consensus that he was not a lottery pick, not an elite prospect. And so for that reason, we're not going to be raking over the coals every GM from picks 1 through 32 that didn't take Jalen Brunson, because it just wasn't what anyone would have expected. And so that's not what we're doing here. However, when there was a consensus about a player at the time and a team still makes the wrong choice, then we're going to be making fun and then we're going to be flaming those GMs for those decisions, because everybody would have known at the time that Luka Doncic is either the best or one of the best prospects in this class. And the fact that the Kings passed on him to go with Marvin Bagley with the second pick, for instance, that is flame-worthy, because like I said, everybody knew that at the time, that he was either the best prospect or one of the best. So that is the type of thing that we will be going back and retroactively saying, what were you thinking? For the ones that are like diamond in the rough, like Jalen Brunson, we're not going to be holding anybody accountable for not picking him. All right, so with that out of the way, one other thing I want to point out, we're going to be using stats from this season, 21-22 NBA season, because if you use their career stats, it kind of skews towards players that have been good since the beginning. And there's definitely value in a player being really good from their rookie season onwards, but I don't think it captures the full value of a player, for instance, like Robert Williams, who has really come on strong over the last year or year and a half. He wasn't necessarily putting up huge stats his rookie season for various reasons, but we're not going to be holding him accountable for that, because we want to know who's the best player now and going forwards. And so we're going to be using this season's stats. Now, with that being said, there's a couple of guys who have been injured or missing for the majority of this season, and we'll caveat those stats when we get to them. So like Michael Porter Jr., Colin Sexton, Kendrick Nunn, they've all missed either the whole season or a large portion of the season. So we'll remember that when we get to them. All right. And then one final note I wanted to point out is that when we say player X should have been the third pick, we're not necessarily going to go through the retroactive exercise of, well, if the third team did take that player, what would their team look like now? And how good would they be? And what other picks would they have gotten after they picked him? Like, we're not going to be going through and retconning every single thing that would have happened in the NBA since then if they had taken that player. We're just going to say that in a vacuum, this is the first best player, this is the second best player, this is the third best player, and so on. Okay, so with all that being said, I think we can move on now to the actual drafts. But before we get to the redraft, we're going to go over the actual draft from 2018. Right, so we'll run through this pretty quickly. With the first pick, the Phoenix Suns selected DeAndre Ayton. With the second pick, the Sacramento Kings took Marvin Bagley. With the third pick, we had some fireworks. We had Dallas trading a future first-round pick and the fifth pick to move up to the third spot, and they selected Luka Doncic. With the fourth pick, the Memphis Grizzlies took Jaren Jackson. With the fifth pick, the Atlanta Hawks, with their traded selection from the Mavericks, they took Trae Young. So then at six, we had Mo Bamba. Seven, Wendell Carter Jr. Eight, Colin Sexton. Nine, Kevin Knox. 10, Mikal Bridges. 11, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 12, Miles Bridges. 13, Jerome Robinson. 14, Michael Porter Jr. 15, Troy Brown Jr. 16, Zaire Smith. 17, Dante DiVincenzo. 18, Lonnie Walker. 19, Kevin Huerter. 20, Josh Okogie. 21, Grayson Allen. 22, Chandler Hutchison. 23, Aaron Holiday. 24, Anfernee Simons. 25, Mo Wagner. 26, Landry Shamet. 27, Robert Williams. 28, Jacob Evans. 29, Zanon Musa. And 30 was Omari Spellman. And then we're not going to go through the entire second round, but just to run through a couple of the noteworthy guys, 32nd, Javon Carter. 33rd was Jalen Brunson. 34, Devontae Graham. 36 was Mitchell Robinson. 37 was Gary Trent Jr. And then 41st was Jared Vanderbilt. And then 42nd was Bruce Brown. We had Hamidou Diallo going 45th, and then De'Anthony Melton going 46th. Then it was Svi Mykhailiuk and Keita Bates-Diop and Chimezie Metu after that. And then we also had, let's see, Shake Milton was 54th. And then some of the noteworthy undrafted guys from 2018, you had Duncan Robinson, Jayshon Tate. He actually wasn't in the NBA until 2 years later, but he was eligible in 2018, so he's included in this. And then you also had Kendrick Nunn, Kenrich Williams, Jordan McLaughlin, Yuto Watanabe, Chris Chioza, and then a ton of guys who have had a cup of coffee in the NBA. But that pretty much covers the noteworthy undrafted and second round guys. So with that, we can finally move on to our actual redraft. Okay, so starting off with the number one pick, and again, we're not going to be retconning here. It's not the Phoenix Suns taking the number one pick. It's just who is the number one pick from this class, and it's got to be Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. There was a lot of people who had projected Luka as the best prospect in the draft. Frankly, I think it was foolish for either of the two teams that picked first to not take Luka. The Suns went with DeAndre Ayton, and there was some skepticism about, what, are you just taking him because he's an Arizona guy? But as it has turned out, he's been really solid. The Kings taking Marvin Bagley, that was even more of a head-scratcher, and he has turned out to not be very good at all. So those two teams really missed out on a generational talent in Luka Doncic. He is incredible. In his fourth season, he is currently averaging almost 28 points per game, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. I mean, he just puts up video game numbers, and he's got the advanced stats to match as well. He's got the second best PER from this class, 24. His win shares, his box plus minus, his VORP are all fantastic as well. I think he's got the best VORP from the class. And he's shooting this season 55% true shooting percentage, which is actually about league average. But when you consider all of what he does for the Mavericks and the difficulty of shots that he takes, that is not too bad at all. And he's got the playoff resume to match as well. He's been fantastic in the playoffs. The last 2 years, the Mavericks were devastatingly defeated by the LA Clippers, but it took incredible performances from Kawhi Leonard to knock them out. So Doncic, I think, will absolutely be putting big numbers up in the regular season and the playoffs going forwards. And I think the Mavs this season, frankly, have a pretty good shot of making some noise in the playoffs, considering how uncertain some of the middle portions of the Western Conference right now are. So we shall see how that all unfolds. But Luka Doncic is pretty clearly the number one pick in this 2018 redraft. For the number two pick, this is where things get interesting. We're going to go with Trae Young. He is the engine of an incredible offense in Atlanta, and he has been ever since he got into the league. This season, he's averaging 28 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 9 assists, and a steal per game. He is 6th in terms of scoring in the league, and he is 3rd in assists. That is pretty incredible. He's got a 25 PER. That is the best out of this entire draft class. So he definitely has the advanced stats to boot. In terms of win shares, he's 2nd. In terms of box plus minus, he is 3rd. And in terms of VORP, he is 2nd. So he is definitely warranted in terms of the traditional stats, in terms of the advanced stats, as the 2nd pick in this draft. He's got a 59 true shooting percentage right now, significantly better than Luka Doncic, and that comes down to the 3-point shooting. He's averaging 38% from 3 this season, whereas Luka's just averaging 33% from 3. He's averaging 89% from the free throw line. So the shooting is incredible for Trae Young, the offense, the distribution. Obviously, the defense is the big question mark for him. But as we saw in the playoffs last year, that wasn't really a problem too much for the Hawks. They got all the way to the conference finals, of course, and it wasn't because of his defense that they lost by any means. So he is absolutely a proven contender in the playoffs, a proven regular season contributor. So Trae Young is your 2nd pick of the 2018 redraft. All right, so with the 3rd pick in this redraft, we're going to take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder, formerly of the LA Clippers. He has really come on strong over the past couple of years. He started out kind of slowly with the Clippers. There was definitely flashes of talent, but he has really developed into an incredible scorer at this point in his career. This season, he's averaging almost 24 points per game, 5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, a steal and a block per game. Now, the advanced stats aren't quite as high on Shai. He's currently 6th in the class in terms of PER, and I think he's 5th in VORP. Some of the other stats like win shares and box plus minus are a little bit lower, but I think that has a little bit to do with the atrocious Oklahoma City Thunder team that he's on. But that is definitely not his fault. He is obviously far and away their best player, and he is still, despite the surrounding talent, putting up incredible numbers. He's got a 54 true shooting percentage this season, so that's not fantastic. He's shooting just 29% from three. That's actually quite disappointing. But like I was saying before, sometimes with guys like Luka or Shea, the difficulty of shots that they're taking and the offensive burden that they're carrying is so high that it is pretty much expected that their shooting percentages would be a little bit lower. So despite that, we are definitely going to go with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander as the third pick in this redraft because he definitely has incredible upside. I think he could be one of the best, if not the best player on a championship contending team. I don't know if I'm ready to necessarily say he is guaranteed to be the best player on a championship contending team. I think he could be close to that, and he could definitely be the second best player on a championship level team. But considering his role as well, the fact that he's a lead ball handler, a scorer, an initiator in terms of the offense, I think that warrants him being the third pick in this redraft. All right, for the fourth pick in the draft, this one might be a little bit controversial. We're going to go with Michael Porter Jr. of the Denver Nuggets. Now, he obviously has had an off season here. He's only played in 9 games this year because of that back injury. And that's actually the reason why he fell all the way to 14 in the original draft, was the back injury and the worries about his health. There was a lot of concerning reports that it's the worst medical I've ever seen in my 15 years as an NBA talent evaluator. So there was definitely red flags with Michael Porter Jr., but the Nuggets took a risk because they already had a lot of talent on their team and they wanted to just take a swing for the fences with the 14th pick. And I would say it has definitely repaid. Michael Porter Jr. has developed into an incredible scorer. Now, his stats for this season, because he's only played those 9 games and he was hampered by that injury in those 9 games, are pretty underwhelming. Just 10 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. That's not knocking your socks off, and his advanced stats are even worse. But if you look at his stats from the end of last year, they were incredible. He was scoring super efficiently, and that is really the name of the game with Michael Porter. He's not a lockdown defender, even though he's really big. He can fill that gap, but he's not going to lock anybody down. But it's the offense that really elevates him. He's super tall. He's like 6'10 or 6'11, but he's got the body type. He moves like a wing, and he's got that silky smooth stroke. And I absolutely think he could be the second best player in terms of offense on a championship level team with this core that he's surrounded by, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. If they all get right and healthy, they could absolutely be a championship contending team. So for that reason, I have Michael Porter Jr. as the fourth pick. There are definitely some guys below him in this redraft that have a much higher floor. They will probably end up being better players in the long run in their NBA careers, and they might already be better players. But I think the ceiling is the highest with MPJ at number 4, and the flashes that we saw at the end of last season warrant him being the fourth pick in this redraft. All right, with the fifth pick in the redraft, we're going to take Mikal Bridges. And this is exactly the type of player I was just talking about, a high floor guy. We know right now Mikal Bridges is a really valuable player on a championship level team because he was literally contending for the championship just last season. He is an integral part of this incredible Phoenix Suns team, the number one team in the entire league. And players like Bridges are exactly why they are that incredible. He is exactly the type of player that teams look for in this day and age of the NBA, 3-and-D. He does both of them excellently. This season, he's only averaging 13.5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Those numbers don't exactly jump off the page. Like I said, with Michael Porter Jr., there's some guys below that definitely have more gaudy stats this season. But with Bridges, it's the intangibles. It's the little things that put him all the way up to the fifth pick. He's got a 14 PER. Again, not really knocking your socks off. It's actually 22nd out of all the players in this draft class. But in terms of win shares, he is third. In terms of box plus minus, he is sixth. And again, that is probably due to the incredible plus minus that the Phoenix Suns have as a team. But with that being said, he is an integral part of that team. He ranks really highly in all of the defensive advanced metrics, like defensive Raptor on 538 and defensive LeBron on bballindex.com. And in terms of his shooting percentages, this is another area in which we can clearly identify his value. His true shooting percentage this season, 62%. That is the best out of any of these guys that we've talked about so far. For a wing player, that is fantastic. He's shooting 36% from three this year. That is exactly where you want him to be. He's taking nearly 4 threes per game, and he's shooting 53% from the field overall. So not the highest ceiling necessarily, but a super high floor. He is the prototypical 3-and-D wing. And so for that reason, Mikal Bridges is the fifth pick in our redraft. Okay, at number 6, we're going to go with Jaren Jackson Jr. Now, this is the first player that we have who is actually falling in our redraft. He was the fourth pick in the original draft. He's now 6th, so he's dropping 2 spots. But that is no knock against him. It is just because there are some incredible players ahead of him. Jaren Jackson is still a fantastic player, and he's on a fantastic team, and he's an integral part, just like Mikal Bridges ahead of them. It's the defense. It's the three-point shooting. He's basically a 3-and-D center, or I guess power forward. He plays alongside Steven Adams or Brandon Clark usually. But nonetheless, the Grizzlies are incredible this season, and he's a big reason why. He's probably the best defender this year out of this entire draft class. He's been fantastic on the defensive end, anchoring that defense for the Grizzlies this year. His traditional stats don't exactly jump off the page. 16.5 points per game this year, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 blocks, though. But he's always struggled to rebound as much as you would like. He seems like the type of player that should be racking up like a 20-10 in terms of points and rebounds, but he just doesn't really score or rebound like you would want. But with that being said, his PER this year is 17.2. That is pretty solid. It's only 10th out of all these guys from the draft class, but PER is always sort of anomalous. Like Mo Wagner, for instance, is higher than him in PER. So he is definitely a player that you just have to see to understand why he is so valuable, and it really comes down to that defense, like I was saying earlier. His shooting splits are a bit disappointing this season as well. He's only shooting 41% from the field and 31% from three. He's got a 53% true shooting percentage, so that's not awful, but you would expect it to be a little bit higher, but still, he is so valuable for this incredible Memphis Grizzlies team, and so Jaren Jackson Jr. is the 6th pick in our redraft. All right, so at this point, Suns fans might be grumbling. We already had Mikal Bridges, but where's DeAndre Ayton? He was the number one pick in the draft. Well, here it is. DeAndre Ayton is your 7th pick in our redraft. So his stats this season are pretty solid. The prototypical big man, he's averaging 16 points per game, 10 rebounds, 1.5 assists, about a steal and a block per game. So pretty solid numbers. He's only played in 41 games this year. He was out for an extended period of time earlier this year with that injury. And then last season, he missed a lot of time due to that suspension from the PED thing. So he is actually a little bit lower than a lot of these guys in terms of total stats accumulated up to this point in his career. But going forwards, he seems like he's going to be an Iron Man in terms of his health status. And so I have a lot of faith in his floor as a solid NBA center. Now, that's kind of the rub with Ayton. He is a really solid NBA center, but what is his ceiling? How good could he be on a championship-level team? I don't think he could ever be more than just a dependent player. Now, he's a very good role player, a very good dependent player, but it's just not really a position of need, not really a role that is sought after in this day and age of the NBA. He has a little bit of range in terms of three-point shooting. He is only taking about 0.3 three-pointers per game this year, but he's shooting 36%. So if he could bump up the three-point shooting just a little bit, he already pops out to the mid-range. So if he could just take a couple of more steps backwards, that would be fantastic. But he really does his damage around the rim. He's shooting 64% from the field, which is incredible this season. He's averaging 66% true shooting, which is also just phenomenal. It's the best by far of anybody that we've talked about thus far. And some of the advanced stats are really solid for Ayton as well. His PER is 22 this season, which is third best out of this entire class. So you could definitely make an argument that he is too low with the 7th pick. I would be totally willing to accept that. But I just think that his ceiling is not quite as high as some of the guys that I have ahead of him in this redraft. He is, in my opinion, never really going to be more than just a really solid role player. I mean, he was incredible in the playoffs last year. Don't get me wrong. He had a couple of monster games, and he was really good defensively as well. So I don't want to diminish what he has done up to this point, but I don't think he would be producing at nearly this level without a guy like Chris Paul, one of the best point guards of all time, setting him up for these beautiful alley-oops. And so not trying to take anything away from what Ayton has done thus far. He's been fantastic, but in our redraft, he's falling all the way down to the 7th pick. Okay, so with the 8th pick, we're going to go with Mikal Bridges with the Charlotte Hornets. He is definitely a guy that has come on strong over the past year or so. He was really a breakout candidate last season, especially like the second half of last season. But this year, he has really solidified himself as a solid scorer on a solid team. So he's averaging, his numbers are off the charts, 20 points per game, 7 rebounds, 3.5 assists. He's averaging a steal and a block as well. He's got a 17 PER. And his win shares is actually 5.3. That's 6th best out of this whole class. So Bridges has the traditional stats and the advanced stats to match. Now, the reason why he's so low is that the defense is not exactly his strong suit, and the Hornets overall have not really exceeded expectations with him putting up these numbers. So I'm not exactly sure if this is not just a case of good stats, mediocre team. But with that being said, it is definitely encouraging that he's gotten all the way up to basically 20 points per game this year. His shooting splits are a little bit down this season from last year. He was almost a 50-40-90 guy last year, but this year he's only shooting 48% from the field, 30% from three, so that's way down, but he's 80% from the free throw line. His true shooting percentage, though, is still 58%, so while the three-point shooting might look pretty disappointing at first glance, the overall production and scoring is nothing to scoff at. So Miles Bridges is clearly going to be the eighth pick in our redraft. And I say clearly because I think there's a bit of a drop from the top eight to the rest of these guys. You could sort of tier it. That top tier is standing head and shoulders above the rest. So with our ninth pick in the draft, we're going to go with Duncan Robinson. Now, this is by far the biggest jump of any player so far because he was undrafted in 2018. Remarkably, he was picked up off the waiver wire by the Miami Heat. And since then, he has flourished into an incredible 3-and-D player. Now, he does not quite have the defensive chops of, say, a Mikal Bridges, but he is certainly a knockdown three-point shooter. He's actually having a down season this year, but he's still shooting 36% from three on 8 attempts per game. That is remarkable. And over the past couple of seasons, he is absolutely one of the top guys in the entire NBA in terms of the three-point shooting. His true shooting percentage is 56%, and it's mainly because all he takes are those three-pointers. He's averaging on the season 11 points per game, 3 rebounds, 1.5 assists. He's got a 10 PER, so those numbers don't exactly jump off the page. He's played in 61 games for the Heat this year. So despite the fact that he's having a slightly down season, he is still an incredible three-point shooter. And I think going forwards, the Heat can rely on Robinson for a long time as that knockdown three-point specialist. And so he is the ninth pick in our redraft. All right, moving along to the 10th pick, we're going to go with Robert Williams of the Boston Celtics. He has really developed over the past couple of years into an incredible presence on the interior for the Celtics, and they are surging at just the right time. If we recorded this, 4 months ago, he might not have been this high, but he has been the anchor of an incredible Celtics defense. They are clearly the best defense in the entire NBA over the past few months. They might even be the best defense over the whole season at this point. It has been a long enough stretch that they have really just dominated the league defensively, and Rob Williams is a big part of that. He is a really smart and athletically gifted defender. He's not quite as big as some of these other centers in this draft class, like DeAndre Ayton or Mitchell Robinson, but he definitely makes up for it with other athleticism. On the season, he's averaging 10 points and nearly 10 rebounds per game, 2 assists and 2 blocks as well. Really solid numbers for him. You love those 2 assists. He's a pretty solid passer, and then the 2 blocks as well. That is evidence of his action and activity on defense. And then the advanced stats absolutely love him as well. Currently, he's got a 21.9 PER. That is fourth best in this class. And all the other ones are incredible as well. Win shares, he is first with an 8.3. Box plus minus, 7.4, second. And VORP, he is at 2.7, which is third. So pretty much any way you slice it, the advanced stats love Robert Williams. And his shooting splits are fantastic as well. He is averaging 72% field goal percentage. That is absurd. He's also 72% from the free throw line, which is not bad at all. And he's not averaging a single three-point attempt so far. He does not pop out at all. But that's okay. That's not his role. And there's some incredible shooters alongside him on the Celtics. And so Robert Williams is the consummate defensive-minded center for the Boston Celtics. So he's going to be our 10th pick in the redraft. All right, with the 11th pick, we're going to go with Jalen Brunson, the guard for the Dallas Mavericks, the second Maverick on this list. So far, the Suns and Mavericks are comprising 4 of the top 11, and Jalen Brunson has been fantastic this year for the Dallas Mavericks. He's averaging 16 points per game, nearly 4 rebounds and 5 assists. He has a 17 PER, 6 win shares. He is an integral part of the surging Dallas Mavericks. They have been really excellent since the Kristaps Porzingis trade. I was a little bit skeptical of that, frankly, just because it seemed like selling low on a player that has a high potential, but it really seems like it has worked out for them so far. Spencer Dinwiddie has been fantastic, and that's another wrinkle in that trade in regards to Jalen Brunson. How would he fit alongside another ball-dominant player in Spencer Dinwiddie? Well, that is one of the things about Jalen Brunson that is fantastic. He just molds and shapes his game to whatever is needed by the team. He can be a ball-dominant point guard, or he can sort of just spot up in the corners and be a shooting guard. He's a fantastic shooter, so either way works for him, and he's a really solid distributor as well. So he's actually been nominally the shooting guard alongside Luka Luka Doncic for the majority of this season. He's been the backup point guard throughout his career up to this point, but he is essentially the go-to second guard now for the Mavericks in the starting lineup, and that is just fantastic. He is shooting 50% from the field this season, 38% from three, so those are incredible numbers. 57% true shooting is really solid. So Jalen Brunson pretty clearly is going to be the 11th pick in our redraft, and I think that kind of completes another tier here. Duncan Robinson, Robert Williams, and Jalen Brunson. Those three guys are a tier that I would consider really solid players on really good teams, but I'm not sure if they necessarily have the potential to warrant being like an elite player on a championship level team, but they're excellent role players and there's nothing wrong with that. And they actually, all three of those guys are also huge steals in the draft. Duncan Robinson was undrafted, Robert Williams was the 27th pick, and Jalen Brunson was the 33rd pick. So really good on those teams for finding those diamonds in the rough. And so we can move on now to our 12th pick in our redraft. We're going to start moving a little bit more quickly here. With the 12th pick, we're going with Anfernee Simons, the scoring maestro with the Portland Trailblazers. He has really come on strong over the past couple of months. Up to this point in his career, up to this season, I should say, he was always sort of rumored to be this guy. Like, the Portland Trailblazers would say, just wait until you see what Anfernee Simons has been doing. But he always sort of disappointed just a little bit because he never really got consistent playing time behind Dame and CJ. But now that CJ is gone and some of the other guys in the rotation as well, he's been their go-to scorer in the starting lineup, frankly, with Dame out with this injury. He is finally putting up really impressive numbers. So he's averaging on the season 17 points per game, 2.5 rebounds, almost 4 assists, and half a steal. He's shooting 44% from the field, 40% from 3 on 7.5 attempts per game. That is incredible. And 88% free throw. So that is 57% true shooting, exactly the same as Jalen Brunson. Now, the problems for Simons are defense and distribution. As a lead ball handler, he's not exactly setting other guys up very well, only 4 assists per game, like I said this year. And then the defense is pretty atrocious. They have been awful over the past couple of months with Simons as a primary piece in their starting lineup, and he's just too small, too weak, and he has bad instincts as well. So because of that limitation, it definitely handicaps some of his potential. But offensively, especially the three-point shooting, he is incredible. So Simons is our 12th pick. With the 13th pick, we're going with Wendell Carter of the Orlando Magic, formerly of the Chicago Bulls. He was the 7th pick in the draft originally, so he has dropped quite a bit. He is really solid, don't get me wrong. He's averaging 14 points per game this year, 10 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and half a steal, half a block. So those are pretty solid numbers. He's got an 18 PER. He's clearly been the Orlando Magic's best player this year, but I just don't really see what the upside is with Wendell Carter. He's shooting 51% from the field this year, 32% from three on 3.5 attempts. So credit to him for getting those shot attempts up. He's got a 59% true shooting percentage, but I mean, for a big man, that's about what you would expect, frankly. So he's been really good in putting up solid numbers on an absolutely terrible team. So I don't really know what that says. I think he could be a solid player on a better team, but he would just have to take a much lesser role, and so that kind of limits his overall upside. But I think on a mediocre team, he could be putting up solid stats for quite some time, and so he's just a solid NBA big man. And also, I think his numbers have been a little bit impacted this season by having to play alongside another big in Mo Bamba. I am not a fan of that too big lineup that Jamal Mosley has been trotting out in Orlando. So Wendell Carter, the 13th pick in our redraft. With the 14th pick, we're going with Colin Sexton. Like Carter Jr. above him, quite a bit lower than his original draft spot. He was 8th in 2018, so he has fallen 6 spots. That's not necessarily that much of a knock against him, though. He's been solid. I think he has been decent value for the 8th pick for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And we're not knocking him at all for the games that he has missed this season. He's only played 11 games this year due to that injury that he sustained near the beginning of the season. But frankly, the success that the Cavaliers have had this year without Sexton is kind of one of the reasons why he's this far down in the draft. He is a solid scorer on a solid team, but I just don't think his efficiency is good enough to really take him to that next level. He's this year, he averaged 16 points per game, 3 rebounds, 2 assists on 41% shooting, 38% from 3. So the shooting from beyond the arc was actually okay, but his true shooting percentage overall is just 52%. So you'd like all of his numbers to be a little bit better. Last season, he averaged like over 20 points per game. That is definitely impressive, but I just feel like there's a little bit of overrating with Colin Sexton because he puts up big numbers, but where is it taking the Cavaliers when he does that? They were a pretty bad team last year, and since he's been out of the picture, they have excelled with Darius Garland at the helm. And now They've got Caris LeVert as well. So what's going to happen with Sexton in the offseason? We shall see. I have a feeling he might get paid by another team and move along from the Cavaliers. And he could probably once again be putting up over 20 points per game. But again, it's just like, I don't really know what that's getting you. His PER this season was 11. And even last year when he was putting up better numbers, it's still the advanced stats just don't really love Colin Sexton. So, you know, decent return for the eighth pick. He could potentially settle into sort of a Jordan Clarkson role for a good team, sort of a sixth man coming off the bench. If he's willing to accept that, I think he could be a contributor to a solid team. It's just whether or not he's willing to take a lesser role. We shall see. But anyways, he's your 14th pick. For 15th, we're going with Gary Trent Jr. Now, this is a huge riser. Besides Duncan Robinson, he's the furthest down player that we've had so far. He was the 37th pick in the original draft. He's going 15th now, formerly of the Portland Trailblazers, now with the Toronto Raptors. He was, of course, traded for Norman Powell. And frankly, I think he's been better than Norman Powell since the trade. Powell has really solid shooting numbers, but Trent Jr. has been scoring pretty well for the Raptors, and he's a fantastic defender alongside Fred VanVleet. They are both undersized guards, but they're both so tenacious on the perimeter defensively for the Raptors. Gary Trent Jr. is averaging 18 points per game this season, 2.5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1.9 steals per game as well. That's actually second in the NBA behind just DeJounte Murray. He's always ranked very highly in all the hustle stats, like deflections and loose balls recovered. So he is the stats definitely bear out what I was saying earlier about him being a tenacious defender on the perimeter. And he's got a 15 PER, which is pretty solid, better than several guys that we've got ahead of him in this redraft. So you could definitely make an argument for him being even higher. He's shooting 41% from the field, 38% from three. His true shooting percentage is 54%. So I wouldn't trust Gary Trent Jr. to like carry a team, especially offensively, but he can definitely be a solid rotation player on a solid team like the Toronto Raptors. So he is going to be our 15th pick in the draft. And then we'll really start moving now that we're in the latter half of the first round. So with the 16th pick, we're going to go with Kevin Huerter. Kind of a similar story with Gary Trent Jr. Huerter is just a solid player on a solid team, the Atlanta Hawks. He was better than solid in the playoffs last year. He was an integral part of their run to the conference finals. This season, he's averaging 11.5 points per game, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. He's got a 12 PER, not bad. He's shooting 46% from the field, 37% from 3. That's really where his value is those 3-pointers. He's shooting 5 threes per game, so quite a bit fewer than Gary Trent this season. But to be fair, he comes off the bench sometimes and he plays fewer minutes. So Kevin Huerter, just a really solid role player on a solid team, 56% true shooting. That is not bad at all. 17th pick, we're going with DeAnthony Melton. Once again, same story, a solid role player, 3-and-D wing. All of these guys, Trent Jr. is more of a guard, but Kevin Huerter, DeAnthony Melton, 3-and-D wings. Melton, obviously a core rotation player for the Memphis Grizzlies. He really doesn't get nearly as many minutes as some of these other guys. He's, in fact, the lowest out of all these guys that we've talked about thus far on a per-minute basis. And frankly, I think he's a bit underutilized for the Grizzlies. I think if he was perhaps on another team that could use him more, like that had less depth at the wing spots, he would be a really valuable player. I think he could totally be like a starter on a really solid team, given the right opportunity. This season, he's averaging about 10 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, nearly 3 assists. So pretty solid numbers. He's got a 15 PER. That is really impressive considering his minutes. And his shooting splits this season, not really lighting the world on fire, but not terrible. 38% from the field, that's, you know, room for improvement there. But 34% from three is solid, and he's 49% true shooting percentage. That's pretty low. So you would like the shooting to be a little bit better, but the defense is solid for Melton. And so he is our 17th pick in our redraft. And he was 46th originally, so a big jump for Melton. With the 18th pick, another big jump, we're going with Jared Vanderbilt. He was originally the 41st pick. He is a defensive-minded power forward for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's really come on strong this season. He's become a bit of a fantasy darling because he really puts up numbers throughout the box score. He's only averaging 7 points per game this year, but he's averaging 9 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.5 steals, and nearly 1 block per game. So really solid numbers throughout the box score. He's, like I said, a defensive stalwart. He's been compared to Dennis Rodman for his rebounding, his penchant for rebounding. He's got a 16 PER, which, as you might know, is notorious for overrating rebounding, so that's not too surprising. He's got a 5 win shares, though. That's really good. The Wolves have just been surprisingly competent all season long, and Vanderbilt has been a consistent part of their starting lineup. So he is absolutely worthy of the 18th pick in this draft. And he's shooting 59% from the field. That's pretty solid. 16% from three on 0.2 attempts per game. So he should probably either work on the threes or cut them out of his shooting diet, because he does not knock them down with very high efficiency. He's shooting 63% from the free throw line. So he's really just a dinker and dumper down low. He's got a 61% true shooting percentage. All right, moving on to the 19th pick, we're going to go with Devontae Graham. Now, he is jumping up. He was originally the 34th pick, but if you had done this perhaps last season, he would have probably been a lot higher, because he is frankly disappointing this season in New Orleans. With the Hornets, specifically last season alongside Terry Rozier, he was a knockdown scorer. He was a really incredible three-point shooter. He still is pretty solid. He's shooting 34% from three this year, but he has just not really developed like perhaps the Pelicans would have hoped for after they gave him that contract. This season, he's only averaging 12.5 points per game, 2.5 rebounds, 4 assists, and he's got a 12 PER. 36% from the field is just really rough. He's got a 51% true shooting percentage. So the shooting has just not really been good enough to make up for the other holes in his game. Last season was unfortunately sort of the high watermark for him. And hopefully for his sake, that is not the case going forwards. If he could get back to that state that he was at last year, where he was scoring pretty efficiently and with pretty high volume, that would be fantastic. But unfortunately, I'm not sure if that is in fact going to happen. I think maybe last season was a bit of an anomaly for Graham. But that being said, he was still a solid pick. With the 34th pick, we've got him at 19 now, and I think he can continue to be a solid scorer off the bench for any team in the NBA. With the 20th pick, we're going with Dante DiVincenzo. Now, he was 17th in the actual draft, so he's actually falling a little bit, but that is not a knock against him. He is a solid player, about what you would have expected from a mid-teens pick. In fact, I think it's fair to say he's exceeded expectations, frankly. I mean, usually when you're picking in the 17-18 range, you're not really getting much of a quality NBA player at that point, on average. But he has been a really solid NBA player. Now, he doesn't really do a whole lot offensively. He's more of a 3-and-D specialist, but he's really a shooting guard-sized player, so it's a somewhat limited skill set. And frankly, if we were doing this list like midway through the season last year, he'd probably be a lot higher, but he has sort of fallen a little bit because of his injury last season. He was out for the majority of their playoff run, and then this season he wasn't really playing much, and then he got traded to the Sacramento Kings. So now that he's with the Kings, he just hasn't really flourished necessarily. He's only averaging 7.5 points per game, 3.5 rebounds. He's shooting 33% from the field. That is pretty disappointing. 29% from three. So definitely a down season for DiVincenzo. I think he can be a lot better than he is right now, especially on a solid team where he's not asked to carry much of an offensive load. He's just sort of spotting up in the corner and playing solid defense on the perimeter. That's really what he's best suited for, perhaps coming off the bench. So for the 17th pick, a solid value. We're going with 20 for Dante DiVincenzo now with our redraft. For the 21st pick, we're going with Bruce Brown with the Brooklyn Nets. He has been another diamond in the rough. He was the 42nd pick in the original 2018 draft. So a solid pick here for the Nets. He is this season not really putting up huge stats because Steve Nash has been sort of experimenting with some of his other guys in the lineup. He's been playing Kessler Edwards and David Duke Jr., some of these rookies, and Bruce Brown has been excised from the lineup to a certain extent. But recently, he's actually been playing a little bit more. I think Steve Nash is getting towards the end of the season and realizing he's going to need to get his rotation in order and start to rely on his veterans. Not that Bruce Brown is a veteran necessarily, but he is a proven player at this point. He was really solid in the playoffs last season. In fact, he was one of the Nets' most important players at certain points in the playoffs. So Bruce Brown, I think you could make an argument that he is too low, frankly, at 21. I think he's probably proven more in the playoffs than a lot of these guys that he is below. But nonetheless, I just think that his ceiling is kind of limited. He's just sort of a solid wing player. 7 points per game this year, 4.5 rebounds. He's shooting 48% from the field, 37% from three, but only on one attempt. So if he could get those three-point attempts up a bit more, that would be very valuable. He's got a 54% true shooting percentage overall. With the 22nd pick, we're going with Jayshon Tate of the Houston Rockets. Now, to be fair, he is actually a second-year player. His first year in the league was last season. He was a rookie, but he was eligible for the 2018 draft. He just wasn't selected, and then he went and played overseas. So Jayshon Tate is eligible for this, and frankly, I think he is deserving of this 22nd pick despite going undrafted in 2018. Much like Bruce Brown, he's just been a solid kind of defensive-minded wing for the Houston Rockets over the past two seasons. He's averaging 12.5 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 3 assists. He's got a 15 PER. That is significantly better than some of the guys ahead of him in this list. And he is shooting 50% from the field and 30% from three. So not exactly lighting the world on fire in terms of any of his stats, but they're all just solid. And that's kind of what I would say about Jae Sean Tate. He's just solid. He's not bad. He is definitely better than an undrafted player, that's for sure. It's just sort of hard to predict what a guy like Jae Sean Tate is going to be or could be on a really good team because he's been on a terrible Houston Rockets team throughout his career thus far. So I think he could, in fact, contribute to winning basketball on a really good team, but we just can't say for sure. But Jae Sean Tate has definitely shown flashes for the Rockets, so he is the 22nd pick in our redraft. With the 23rd pick, we're going with Shake Milton, the backup guard for the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, he is also having a bit of a down season this year. He's only averaging 9 points per game, 3 rebounds, about 3 assists. He's got a 12 PER. He's shooting 41% from the field and 28% from 3. That is really disappointing. I think, frankly, he was much better last season. He has the potential to be a solid go-to scorer off the bench for a solid team like the 76ers, but he's just a bit inconsistent. He's only played in 34 games this season. He's been injured. But even when he's healthy, he's just not really at the level of, say, a Jordan Clarkson or Tyler Hero, guys that are just consistent bucket getters. They might not have the best field goal percentage necessarily, but they're always good for like 14 or 16 points per game. Shake Milton, just not at that level. And I think he could maybe get to that point at some point, but it's been a down season and he's frankly been a bit inconsistent throughout his career thus far. But still, he's shown flashes as a scorer off the bench. At 24, we're going with Kendrick Nunn, basically the same boat as Shake Milton, a scorer off the bench, but he has totally been derailed by injury. He has not played a single second this season. He was really solid for the Heat last year, but then he was traded in the offseason to the Lakers. And then this injury has just kept him out of the lineup all year long. So I think he's probably taken a bit of a hit because of that injury, just because we've missed out on a lot of his development. I think he would frankly be playing key rotation minutes for the Lakers right now if he was healthy, but he hasn't been. And so if he was fully healthy and he had continued to develop even more, he could be up in the Kevin Huerter, Gary Trent Jr., even Colin Sexton range. But unfortunately, this has set him back a little bit. He is down at 24, and hopefully next season and going forwards, he can get back to those levels. With the 25th pick, we're going with Grayson Allen, sort of along the same lines as Dante DiVincenzo, his replacement in Milwaukee. Allen, he has been solid for the Bucks this year. He's shooting 43% from the field, 39% from three on 6 attempts, so that's nothing to sneeze at. He's averaging 11 points per game, 3 rebounds. He's got a 13 PER, so solid numbers for Grayson Allen. He's got a 58% true shooting percentage, so the shooting is definitely there, but it's just the defense. He's not quite as defensively stout as some of the other guys in this vein, like the aforementioned DiVincenzo or Kevin Huerter, not to just name drop all the white guys. But I think Allen, he's been okay. I think he's obviously the weakest link in the Bucks starting lineup, but he's not taking anything significantly off the table, and he's knocking down three-pointers at a high enough clip that you got to respect him out there. So you could argue that he's a bit too low here, all the way down at 25, but I think it's just a testament to how deep this draft has been that we've got 25 really solid NBA players to deal with here from the 2018 draft. So Grayson Allen he was originally 21st, but now he's the 25th pick in our redraft. With the 26th pick, we're going with Mitchell Robinson, another decent player here for the New York Knicks. He was originally 36th in 2018. He is averaging 8 points per game and 8.5 rebounds this season. He's averaging 1.5 blocks. And he is another guy for whom the advanced stats are absolutely crazy. He's got a 20 PER, 6.2 in win shares. Those are actually both top 5 in this entire class. So there are definitely flashes of brilliance for Mitchell Robinson. He'll have like a 16 points and 16 rebounds game every once in a while. But it's just the consistency that's the problem with Robinson. He is annoyingly tantalizing. Every once in a while, he has a game where you think, this is a top 10 center in the NBA. But then for the most part, he's just sort of average. He floats in and out of games. He gets in foul trouble. He gets injured frequently. And so he just doesn't really warrant much of a higher spot than this. He's just an average center on a middling team. He was frankly not great in the playoffs last year. He was played off the court by Taj Gibson, which is a indictment in and of itself. So he is gigantic. He shoots 76% from the field, which is absurd, but he's just not dynamic enough, not consistent enough to warrant much higher of a spot. And I think, frankly, this is about where the cutoff is in terms of solid players on solid teams. I think below this point, we are getting into the, like, backups on decent teams range. We're talking about Lonnie Walker, Landry Shamet, Hamidou Diallo. So these are guys where I'm not really sure how much of a role they could actually have on a really good team anymore. Mitchell Robinson's kind of the last one where he could definitely be like a backup on a solid team. But once we get into the Lonnie Walker range, I'm not really sure what their role on a really good team would be anymore. So with the 27th pick, we are, in fact, taking Lonnie Walker for the San Antonio Spurs. He was the 18th pick in 2018, so he has definitely fallen a little bit. The Spurs took a shot with Walker because he's got incredible athleticism and physical gifts, but it just hasn't really ever translated to contributions to winning basketball for Walker. He's averaging 12 points per game this season, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, but he's pretty inefficient. He is shooting 41% from the field and 31% from three. He's got a 51% true shooting percentage. So disappointing there. Some of the advanced stats are okay, but some of them are pretty terrible. He's got a negative 2.8 box plus minus. That is brutal. So Lonnie Walker, tantalizing, kind of like Mitchell Robinson, but he just hasn't really shown much of an ability to consistently and efficiently score for the Spurs. He's just too inefficient. With the 28th pick, we're going with Landry Shamet. Now, he could potentially have an argument to be a lot higher than this. He has actually played significant minutes on decent teams, but I just don't really know what the upside is with Shamet. He's just kind of like an unathletic, score-first player. He's averaging 7 points per game this season on admittedly low minutes. He's only played 900 minutes this season for the Suns in 49 games. But still, the advanced stats don't really love him. He's shooting 36% from the field this season, 34% from three. That's okay, but 52% true shooting, not the greatest. Every once in a while, he'll come out with like a 17-point game here or there, but for the most part, he's just sort of a slightly inefficient, slightly unathletic scorer, and so for that reason, he's all the way down here. But like I said, I could definitely understand if you think he would be a little bit higher than this in terms of our redraft. With the 29th pick, we're going with Hamidou Diallo for the Detroit Pistons. Diallo was originally selected by the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then he was traded to Detroit. He's been putting up decent stats this season on a pretty atrocious Pistons team. He's averaging 11 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal. He's got a 16 PER thanks to those slightly exaggerated box score stats just because he's putting up numbers on a crappy team. It's kind of a classic good stats, bad team player. Although, frankly, his stats aren't even that good, to be honest. Although he is shooting 49% from the field. That's not bad at all, but he's shooting 25% from three. That is atrocious. And he's 65% from the free throw line. So that's really a red flag. He's got a 54% true shooting, but I just don't really know how consistent and efficient, like Lonnie Walker, Hamidou Diallo can be on an actually good team going forwards. With the 30th pick, we're going with Mo Bamba, another guy like Mitchell Robinson, sort of. He shows flashes every once in a while. He's got the athletic potential, to be sure, but he just never really has been able to develop very much in the NBA. He was the 6th pick in the draft, so one of the biggest fallers that we've had so far. I definitely think it's fair to call him a bust, unfortunately. He's averaging 10 points and 8 rebounds per game this season. He is averaging 1.8 blocks, I should say, and he's got a 15.8 PER. So some of his numbers, respectable, but he's shooting 47% from the field, which is frankly disappointing for a center. His three-point shooting has actually been okay. He's shooting, 34% on 3.7 attempts per game. So that's actually surprisingly competent, but his true shooting percentage is just 56%. So I just feel like there's a lot missing from Bamba's game at this point. In his fourth year, he should have really developed at this point. He's finally getting a lot of playing time. That's been the problem up to this point in his career, when he's been behind Nikola Vucevic in the lineup, that he just could never really see the court. But at this point, he's had plenty of opportunities this season alongside Wendell Carter, and he just hasn't really developed very much. So Bamba is our final pick of the first round, and he is our biggest bust so far. All right, so moving on to the second round, we're going to go much more quickly here. With the 31st pick, Aaron Holiday. He has bounced around the league. He was on the Pacers at first and then the Wizards last season, and now he's with the Suns. He's not really playing very much this season. He has only played 777 minutes in 47 games. So not really that much of a role for him at this point on a solid team. He's averaging 6.5 points per game, 1.5 rebounds, 2 assists. He's shooting 47% from the field, 37% from three. So his shooting splits are actually pretty solid. And throughout his career, he's always sort of been a hidden gem and under the radar guy for the NBA bloggers. But I don't know. I think the fact that he's not really playing much for the Suns at this point is sort of evidence of where he's at in his career at this point. With the 32nd pick, we're going with Kenrich Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, he's actually played more minutes this season than a lot of guys in this range. He's played 49 games, 1,000 minutes, over 1,000 minutes. He's averaging 7 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists. He's another favorite of the NBA blogosphere, especially Zach Lowe. I don't really see the upside with Williams. He's just sort of an average backup big man on a really crappy team, to be specific. I think he could be an average backup big man on a good team, though, if given the opportunity. He's shooting 46% from the field, 33% from three, so those numbers don't really jump off the page. He's shooting 54% from the free throw line, so I think the upside is pretty limited for Kenrich Williams. But he's a smart player. He knows where to be, so like I said, I think he could be an average sort of third-string big man on a decent team. With the 33rd pick, we're going with Marvin Bagley. Now, finally, we get the second pick in the draft. He has fallen all the way down. You could argue that it's a bit harsh on Bagley to be this low, but I just honestly don't think he is a very good player, frankly. But the problem is, because he was the second pick in the draft, he's got name recognition, and he's got this sheen. He was the second pick, so people are going to fall into the trap of, well, let's give Marvin Bagley a chance, and that's exactly what's happening right now in the Detroit Pistons. He's getting an opportunity, and I don't want to knock the guy or say that I don't want him to succeed. If he could succeed with the Pistons, that would be great, but I think it's been proven at this point that he is not an efficient player. He's not a very useful player, being a power forward that can pop out to the three but doesn't shoot it very well. This season, he's shooting 47% from the field, 23% from beyond the arc. He's got a 52% true shooting percentage. He's got a negative 3.3 in the box plus minus. That is rough. So I don't think Bagley is very good. Could you argue that he's got more talent than a couple of these guys ahead of them in this redraft? Yes, you absolutely could. But like I said, it's all of the extra possessions and shots that he takes up that's the problem. So Bagley, the 33rd pick, he falls all the way. He falls, 31 spots. Definitely the biggest bust of the 2018 draft. With the 34th pick, we're going with Keita Bates-Diop, a decent third-string wing for the San Antonio Spurs. He's bounced around in the league. This season, he's averaging 5.5 points per game, 3.9 rebounds per game. So decent numbers and very limited minutes for the Spurs. He's shooting the ball 51% from the field, 36% from three. So solid numbers, 57% true shooting. I'm not sure how well that would translate to a bigger role on a better team. It might. I think he could be an okay, backup wing on a decent team, but it just hasn't really been that impressive so far for Bates-Diop. And I think his stint with the Spurs has put him even further under the radar than he would otherwise be. So maybe he'll get another opportunity on a better team. We shall see. With the 35th pick, we're going with Troy Brown Jr. Just another okay wing player, sort of a third string guy of the Bulls. He's also bounced around in the league. He was playing for the Wizards at one point. And so he's actually played 900 minutes this year for the Bulls in 52 games because they've been so ravaged by injuries, with Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball and Patrick Williams all being out for extended periods. So Brown Jr. has gotten a little bit more of a look than he otherwise would have. And he's been okay, like I said, but just not really much upside there. He's shooting 40% from the field, 34% from three. With the 36th pick, we're going with Keelan Martin, formerly of the Indiana Pacers, now with the Boston Celtics. He was actually undrafted in 2018, so good for him that he has made it this far. And he's shown flashes, particularly at the end of last year, beginning of this year for the Pacers. He was solid in a couple of games, coming off the bench, scoring 16, 17 points. He's averaging 6 points per game this year, 2 rebounds on 41% shooting, 29% from three. So that's pretty disappointing, and I would frankly be surprised if he sees the court much at all for the Celtics. Moving on to the 37th pick, Chimezie Metu of the Sacramento Kings, formerly of the San Antonio Spurs. Just an okay player. He's averaging this season 8.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. He was starting for a lot of the season this year in place of Marvin Bagley. Luke Walton basically just excised Bagley from the lineup and said, "Metu, you're in." And he was okay. He had a stretch there where he was averaging 10 points and 9 rebounds, but he's sort of playing less now, and on the season, he's only shooting 43% from the field and 27% from three. Next up, the 38th pick, Jordan McLaughlin of the Minnesota Timberwolves, another undrafted guy. He's just been sort of a solid pickup for them, coming off the bench in very limited minutes. He's had a pretty solid season. He's played 586 minutes this year in 45 games. But with that being said, honestly, his numbers are not very impressive. Three points and 3 assists per game on 36% shooting. With the 39th pick, we're going with Drew Eubanks, the big man formerly of the San Antonio Spurs. Now, with the Portland Trailblazers, he was moved along with Thad Young to the Raptors in that trade, and then he was cut from the Raptors, and so the Portland Trailblazers picked him up, and he's actually been starting for Portland. Yusuf Nurkic went out, and so he is the starting big man for the basically G League Portland Trailblazers that they're putting out right now. For their tanking purposes, he's been great. On the season, he's averaging about 5 points and 4 rebounds. He's shooting 54% from the field, but 12% from three. So just not really much upside there with Drew Eubanks. All right, and so we are at the 54-minute mark, so I'm just going to run through these last 20 because I don't think anybody has too strong of opinions about who is the 40th pick and who's the 41st pick with Brandon Goodwin and Yuta Watanabe. So we're just going to run through these really quick. A lot of these guys were undrafted or second-rounders anyways. So like I said, 40th, we're going with Brandon Goodwin. 41st, Yuta Watanabe. 42nd, Mo Wagner. 43rd, Jock Landale. 44th, Javon Carter. 45th, Svi Mykhailiuk. 46th, Josh Okogie. 47th, Alize Johnson. 48th, Chris Chioza. 49, Kevin Knox. 50, Justin Jackson. 51, Haywood Highsmith. 52, Rodions Kurucs. 53, Omari Spellman. 54, Gary Clark. 55, Chandler Hutchison. 56, Winyon Gabriel. 57, Jalen Adams. 58, Alonzo Trier. 59, Jerome Robinson. And 60, Kyrie Thomas. A lot of those guys are not even in the league anymore, but they were in the league at one point, and they were okay. And probably the biggest noteworthy name in that group of guys would be Kevin Knox with the 49th pick. He was originally 9th, and so he is obviously, along with Marvin Bagley, probably the biggest bust of the 2018 draft. So in summary, I think the 2018 draft was incredible. We have Luka Doncic, Trae Young, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Michael Porter Jr., and Mikal Bridges rounding out our top five, but we've also got several other amazing prospects, Jaren Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, Miles Bridges. It was just a loaded draft, to be sure, and it is so interesting how it all played out. Some incredible players, and who knows, we might have to redo this redraft at some point in the future if things significantly change for some of these guys, but for now, we'll leave it at there. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod, or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, consider subscribing or leaving a review, and we'll be back tomorrow to recap all the action from today, Saturday, March the 12th, and to preview the action for Sunday, March the 13th. Until then, thanks for tuning in.